Gentlemen, in 3, 2, and 1. Hello, I'm your host, Aaron Ripmaster. Welcome to the Man Cave, where joining me tonight live for Diz Dad's podcast number 480 for Sunday, March 5th, 2017 are Brad Coates.
Greetings, everybody.
Terry Hawkins.
My rum's only 3/4 full, so you better make this quick.
Nathan Trent.
Hello, humans.
Oh, come on. Let's try that again.
Hello, humans.
That's better.
All right. And Paul, I got everybody. Yes. Paul, did I introduce you?
Yeah, you forgot me at first, but I'm here and I stole the rest of Terry's rum, so we're good to go.
Or at least you are. We may lose
Terry. You bugger.
So, as you can tell, you know, we're getting into it a little bit early tonight because we're celebrating our 6th birthday. So, happy 6th birthday to us. We've got to try and see if we can do a quick birthday song for ourselves here.
God danced the day you were born. The angels did the bump to Gabriel's horn. God dance the day you were born, grateful for the gift of you. I saw him do the funky chicken, stepping and kicking in blue suede shoes. I saw him do the boogaloo too, grateful for the gift of you. Now some folks say that long ago God couldn't dance to save his soul, but Saint Peter taught him how to jelly roll, grateful for the gift of you, God.
All right, so we got to enjoy a little self-congratulatory happy birthday song. That was a thanks shout out to my buddy Guy Forsythe, just enjoy that. So as long as we're celebrating a birthday, I thought we should play that a little bit too. But you know, it's nostalgia time. We're calling this show That Was Then, This Is Now, and we're going to be talking about all the ways that Walt Disney World and in some cases also other parts of the Disney company have changed since episode 1 of the Diz Dads podcast dropped way back on February 27th, 2011. My goodness, Terry's got a head start on me and I still can't talk. Before we get to our discussion, I do need to take a minute and thank our sponsor, Fantastic Memories Travel, and the Mouse Master Travel Group. The Mouse Master Travel Group focuses on Disney destination vacations, and Mouse Master agents would love to take care of the stressful parts of vacation planning so you can focus on the fun. You can check them out at mousemastertravel.com. Okay, guys, so we actually had a fun chat going for a while here, kind of trying to keep track of what all these changes were, because, you know, there's really a surprisingly large number of things that have changed at Walt Disney World over the last 6 years. So we're going to kind of, you know, get things going here a bit, but, you know, as these topics trigger things in the chat room, we'd love it if you would share your thoughts about these same topics as well. And if you happen to have Skype up and running at home, let us know. And you know, we'll take some calls along the way as well. So why don't we get started here with just kind of talking about the things that we've noticed the most. You know, what are some of these big changes that have hit at Walt Disney World? And you know, Terry, you're the first, or actually, Nate, you got the first sort of comprehensive list to me. So when you were putting your list together, what really jumped out at you about changes at Walt Disney World over the last, you know, last 5 years? I mean, this is the sixth year, so.
Well, the biggest thing, I guess, would be the additions of new Fantasyland, but most of my spreadsheet was about prices.
Well, that's true. So,
you wanted to?
We can talk about either piece, because I mean, you know, those are important questions too, and maybe that's a decent place to start. We can talk about the fact that, you know, there's a lot different now than there were 6 years ago when it comes to, you know, what a Walt Disney World trip costs, what that looks like. So why don't you maybe take us to the thing, you know, when you put that list together, Nate, that stood out to you the most about those changes?
I guess the one that was most glaring to me was the overall, the typical ticket price increased anywhere from let me look at my spreadsheet. I've forgotten. the lowest was like 18% to 56%, 57%. That's a significant increase.
Right. And right.
Yeah. It certainly does cost a lot more to go there 6 years later than it did back in 2011.
Right. And you know, I mean, we can spend a little bit of time here talking about kind of where that all comes together, because I think that part of what was going on is this podcast started in 2011. I think that was sort of the tail end of what was sort of a economic downturn for Walt Disney World. I mean, there was a tough time there in terms of theme park attendance and, you know, travel in general took a while to bounce back. And you know, if you go back and look at 2008, 2009, that's when a lot of sort of really massive discounts were getting run. In some cases, and if I'm remembering correctly, you know, that's sort of the era where things like free dining were born, right? That we're trying to bring crowds back from the tourism decline.
Yeah, we used to. That was the time. I'll never forget it. We used to get the buy four, get three nights promo, which I haven't seen in 4 or 5 years. But I mean, literally, you would buy four nights at your hotel with tickets, and you'd get three more nights and three more days of tickets. And I remember we stayed at Bay Lake for the first time because we were able to get, you know, Bay Lake at four nights prices and stay a whole week. And that's actually what got us hooked. We ended up doing DVC because of it. But I have seen nothing even resembling those kind of discounts in years.
Yeah, right. That's a good example. And you know, our first trip, I mean, you know, we were at the Polynesian, and the reason we could stay at the Polynesian was that they were running discounts. And, I wish I still had. I can't find the numbers from the spreadsheet that I used way back then for that first trip. But I want to say that we got like a 40% off deal at the Poly.
Sure.
I don't remember the last time we've seen, you know, 40% off of anything. So you know, I think that to a certain extent, obviously, there's no question these numbers have gone up substantially, but I think it happens that the podcast started sort of right as all of those things were bouncing back.
Yeah, the timing, yeah.
You know, as long as we're talking pricing, you know, the other thing to me that was kind of interesting is that if you look at resort pricing, I think you see some kind of interesting stuff here. Nate, am I crazy or am I seeing that there are actually some negative numbers?
If you notice, I labeled that one kind of red. That would be on the deluxe villas.
Right.
And my 2011 prices came directly from Disney. There was a post on the Disney blog. Anybody can find it themselves. It's like 2011 Magic Your Way facts.
Okay.
It's up there on the Disney blog. The 2017 prices, I was looking at the website Mouse for Less, and I'm not certain. I was sleepy at the time I got to this tab, and I may not have the right number.
Okay, so those may not be the most reliable numbers is what you're telling.
Those may not be the most reliable numbers. But
okay. Well, then I won't get too excited about the fact that according to your numbers here, that prices at...
Well, for example, up there at Bay Lake Tower, you're cutting in and out there for me. I'm sorry I was interrupting you, too. The Bay Lake Tower, the basically, I have price ranges from the cheapest room to the on a value date to the most expensive room on a holiday weekend, you know,
right,
like New Year's Eve night. And the price on the holiday night actually dropped, but the regular room price went up. So there was a 9% drop there on average. You know, I averaged the numbers to come up with my percentages. So.
All right, so what that really may reflect is just a little bit of a change in the sort of the structure of the pricing at the deluxe villas. That makes a little more sense, because I couldn't figure out how we were getting a price decline in that level of service overall.
That was the only category I saw something like that. But
yeah. Anything else about pricing kind of jump out at you?
As values, it seemed like as you went up in category, the percentage of the change was less. The values had the most increase over time.
Yeah.
And they're bringing that price point up a little bit, and the moderate stayed, 30% increase over 6 years. So,
right. Well, we're talking about 5% or so a year.
Yeah, and in deluxes, looks like they were anywhere from 10 to 30. I may have some of the pricing issues there, too, that the deluxe villas had.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the deluxes, it makes a certain amount of sense that the rate of increase leveled out some, just because at the size of that the prices were, when you increase something that's already at, over what? Looking at these, ranging mostly between $330 and $440 a night.
Yeah.
10% increase on that is a big chunk of increase as compared to a 10% increase on $180 room. So.
And these prices are rack rate, and doesn't include promos or anything like that as well. So, deluxes are already expensive. They're out of my budget. I know that.
Okay.
Those price differences play a lot into, I'm involved in a couple of other podcasts where we do a lot on DVC.
Yep.
And seeing these numbers, you really start to question whether DVC is a good value to buy then, because your maintenance is going up higher than these are percentages are going up over 5 and 6 years in the deluxe range. So, because one of the excuses people say about DVC is, well, it's cheaper than the rooms are going up. It looks to me like the rooms are actually going up slower than the cost of DVC. So eventually, your room will be cheaper.
I guess that's possible. That's an interesting question for maybe for another show.
Another podcast.
but it's a good question. I mean, at a certain point, the DVC piece, they've got to be able to sell value there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So. All right.
My mind's spinning. I got to go get some more coffee to read all these numbers. I'm just feel like I'm in the office working. Wow.
Right. Well, maybe we'll step away from numbers a bit, and I'll throw things over to Terry for a second. And Terry went through and compiled a spreadsheet for us that had sort of a park by park list of major changes. And what? Maybe we'll start and work our way around, a park at a time. And the park that probably makes the most sense to start with is Magic Kingdom, primarily because of, again, the timing, right? The show started in 2011, and it was right on the heels of the announcements about New Fantasyland that we were, recording our first show. So looking at that, list you made, Terry, of the big changes in the Magic Kingdom from 2011 to 2017. Is there an overall pattern that jumps out at you, or an individual thing that really, you know, sticks out as being the signature change?
Yeah, they removed decent coffee, put in this brown sludge instead, and started serving pot roast mac and cheese.
That officially now makes you the very first human being on the face of the earth that has indicated a preference for Nescafe over anything on this planet. There are people who would drink battery acid over Nescafe.
I love Nescafe, and the reason for that was the first time.
Because you drink too much. That's why. Okay. It's ruined your palate.
That's
what the rum will do.
Yeah. So we first had Nescafe on the Disney cruise ship, and if you do that, you're going to fall in love with whatever it is you have.
Oh, there you go. That's a good point. Yeah.
But even the cruise line has upgraded to Joffrey's now.
Joffrey's is good. Yeah. It's that Seattle stuff that they dredge from the bottom of the river that.
Okay. See, I'm no Starbucks fan either, really, for the most part, but I mean, that's another big change, right? Is that we've seen Starbucks pop up in all four parks, and I guess I'll give them a little bit of credit, because even though I'm not a Starbucks fan, and I don't think, I mean, I've been back to the park several times. I don't think I've actually purchased any Starbucks coffee in the parks. But I will say that I thought they did a pretty nice job of bringing those shops in without impacting the atmosphere around them, you know, too significantly, right? I mean, I don't feel like I'm walking past the coffee shop at the mall.
They did a much better job than I thought they were going to do when it was first announced they're bringing in Starbucks.
Yeah.
I mean, it's much more understated, I think, than anybody anticipated. So I do think I completely agree with you, Aaron. I think they did a much better job than anybody, you know, saw coming.
Yeah, I agree totally there. For other changes at Magic Kingdom, nothing happened.
It's been a quiet 6 years.
Yeah, it's been a real quiet 6 years. You wouldn't notice a change at all there. Yeah. No, it was interesting going back and taking a look at the maps from 2011 and seeing that the whole Toontown isn't even on the maps, and it's like, oh right, it was all shut down at the time for the Fantasyland expansion. Right. So in 2011, to give everybody an idea, we still had the Enchanted Tiki Room was still under new management. they still were finding paintbrushes on Tom Sawyer's Island. You're dealing with the old queue at Peter's Pan. But the big stuff was, you know, Dumbo was still in its location in 2011, because they waited to the last minute to move that, but they shut down
what that meant, right? I mean, Dumbo being in that location right behind the castle meant that, first of all, Dumbo was an absolute rite of passage. You know, every young kid, it was a big deal to ride Dumbo, and there was no fast pass for it, and you stood in line for upward of 25-30 minutes, even on slower days, and longer if it was any kind of a busy day.
But it did self-regulate that line.
To some extent, you planned entire trips around getting on the Dumbo.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, you had to do it, and it really did add to the crowds in that back area, particularly in 2011 with the construction going on with, you know, there just being not much past Dumbo. Right. You know, since then, they've added Enchanted Tales with Belle, Under the Sea, Ariel's Grotto, the whole Pete Silly Sideshow, Casey's, Barnstormer reopened, Princess Fairy Hall, Be Our Guest Restaurant, with the very first liquor service in Magic Kingdom.
That's right.
We need a round of applause there.
That's a good point.
Gaston's Tavern.
Oh, no, we should be accurate. It's not liquor service. Beer and wine only. Oh,
beer and wine, sorry. The first alcohol service. Right, there we go. And the Barnstormer reopened in its current, somewhat lesser version. But that, and as I alluded to earlier, you know, they added the mac and cheese with pot roast at Friar's Nook. If you're Joe or Randall, if you happen to be myself, they added pot roast with a little bit of mac and cheese. You know, what else did we have?
Say the thing about that that kind of strikes me overall is I think that of all the parks, Magic Kingdom, maybe most of all, had a substantial increase in the quality of food service that was available.
Oh, my.
Because, yeah, you know, 2011, there just wasn't much there that was worth eating.
No, 2011, it was your old hot dogs and chicken fingers, you know, the which all tasted pretty much the same.
Well, and, you know, and even your table service today, options in the Magic Kingdom at that point, you know, they were not doing quality food, you know? I mean, that look, people who went and ate at Cinderella's Table in 2011 came out complaining vociferously about, you know, how much they paid for just plain bad food.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was poor, and there was, you know, but Disney listened, and that was the thing that when you look back at the menus and what was going on there, you realize, hey, you know what? Disney really actually listened. You know, at this last convention, my daughter ordered lionfish at Skipper's Canteen. Lionfish. Like, it's gone from chicken fingers and hot dogs to, you know, food you can't get anyplace else in Orlando.
Right.
And it was so good, lionfish.
Yeah.
I just had it. It was good.
Oh, yeah. And
Joe was just talking about, you know, Columbia Harbor House and Liberty Tree being the best options that were there. And even among those, I mean, Columbia Harbor House is upgraded. They added a terrific salmon with couscous and broccoli, you know, steamed broccoli on the side. I mean, it was a table service quality meal that you could get at a counter service. And I'm pretty sure they added that sometime mid 2012 or so.
Yeah, it's just been, like I say, Magic Kingdom has probably undergone some of the biggest refurbishments, and the food is the number one. I say that seriously, even though, I mean, they've added the entire Fantasyland section. But
yeah, with all the
really,
that's still what stands out the most.
Yeah. The fact that you can go to and get unique foods. You can also find the chicken fingers and that for the super picky eaters, but it's nice for everybody else to have a selection.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So Brad, how about you? What stands out to you about the changes in the Magic Kingdom, you know, since 2011?
Well, I think for me, because I'm one of the Disneyland guys, most of the Diz dads are, you know, born and bred in Disney World, where my first experiences were always Disneyland. I had only been to Disney World a couple of times before 2011. So it was still pretty fresh for me. Mm-hmm. But I think of all the things that have changed, and there's been so many that have changed. I think the one thing that leaped out to me was during that season where they made several changes, but the one that stuck in mind was the Festival of Fantasy Parade and the castle projection shows. When those things started to, they started adding those new kind of pluses, man, that was awesome.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, we hadn't really talked about those much before, and they really do change the character of the park. I mean, you know, I'd been to Magic Kingdom several times with no interest at all in seeing an afternoon parade. But
right.
I make a point of trying to see Festival of Fantasy because it's worth seeing.
Yeah, don't you feel like it used to be they would just kind of, they'd kind of dress up. They'd change the fireworks, dress it up. They'd change the parade, they'd dress it up. But it was kind of the same kind of an experience. It didn't really change. Where with these changes, they were game changers. They it's almost gave you a different experience. I loved it.
Yeah, I would agree. How about you, Nate? What's the elements of change that stand out to you in Magic Kingdom?
Well, Terry mentioned the food, and I don't remember him mentioning the Skipper's Canteen. That's kind of all inclusive there, but
right, well, Skipper's Canteen. He was talking about the lionfish that his daughter bought.
Okay, yeah, I didn't. Yeah. Okay, I didn't. I must have nodded off there or something. Okay. But the biggest thing, and it's not necessarily just the Magic Kingdom, but the Magic Bands and the way you get Fast Passes now. We were in paper Fast Passes back in 2011.
Yeah,
that's right. Well, and I think that's had a bigger impact on the Magic Kingdom than maybe any place else. I mean, Hollywood Studios to some extent too, but especially Magic Kingdom, because it's the one park that really has enough attractions that demand Fast Pass Plus that you can really leverage the system.
And it doesn't have the tier system, so it actually gives you a more wide open experience with how FastPass Plus can work and be positive.
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
And I'm sorry. Along with the Magic Bands, you have some interactive experiences on attractions like the Haunted Mansion. Now, during the DizDads Convention 5, there I had one. The one of the hitchhiking ghosts on the way out held up a sign and said, Tennessee or bust.
That's cool. Well,
That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's great stuff because it's the kind of thing that they've been promising, right? I mean, that was the stuff that they told us was coming with Magic Bands that it's been a little slow actually getting implemented. So I think the one you're talking about there in Haunted Mansion is the one that's maybe the signature, success of those, plussed up experiences due to Magic Bands.
That and the videos, the ride videos, that's pretty cool too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So Paul, how about you? What stands out to you in Magic Kingdom?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest things would be New Fantasyland and definitely the changes to Fast Pass Plus with the Magic Bands. But most recently, kind of a nostalgia type of thing is they've done away with the opening show. So the show that's been there forever, when the train pulls up, they do the good morning song and they welcome you to the park, and the mayor comes out and he opens up the park and everybody rushes through the gates. It was just over the DizDads convention that we were there. That Monday morning was the first day that they changed it following the day after the marathon. And now they let you into the park when you get there, I don't know, maybe 8 o'clock or so, an hour before opening. They let you wander down Main Street, and now there's an opening show at the castle some point before 9 o'clock, before they open up all the different, lands. That's something I think, our family was really big on. We always loved that. We always loved being there for, quote unquote, rope drop. And they did away with the different rope drops, right? They had, and I don't remember the years, but there were rope drops at Epcot, at Hollywood Studios, and at Animal Kingdom in different forms that we saw over the years that all at some point went away.
Yeah, all of them went away over a relatively short period of time, one after another over about a two-year period, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, Magic Kingdom was the last one where it was still kind of like, it was there and it was when you remember. So that changed. I mean, everything changes, right? But I think that's one that people got used to, and it was kind of, a traditional type of thing that they did.
So here's the thing I wonder about the Magic Kingdom show, and maybe somebody else can pipe up and either agree or disagree. But it seems to me that with the Magic Kingdom show, they're just making the best of a problematic situation because they're doing work
the
on
train.
The railroad.
Yeah.
So they weren't going to be able to run the railroad anyway. And at least by doing this, you get a welcoming show instead of getting no show at all if they continue to hold people all the way outside the gates and then just, wait for park opening or do some less dramatic show because you couldn't have the train pulling up to open things.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, they did it when we were there the last time we saw it. I think it was Saturday morning or something, or they did it without the train. I mean, they came out and they did the song and dance, they did everything with the train. And it does seem, though, it's a good way for them to get people in the park, you know, less congested, get people in the shops, get people, you know, buying food and buying merchandise earlier. So from a business standpoint, I think it actually makes sense to let them in, people in earlier. And that's probably why they're going with it.
I always liked it when they did that at Hollywood Studios. They seemed to me that they started doing that at Hollywood Studios before that. And it works really well because not everybody's headed the same place. And so by letting people kind of fill the hub, you know, when the ropes drop, it's really not a rope drop, right? It's you know, rope drops all around and people disperse.
Yeah, I don't think it's a bad change. I think it'll work better. I think it's just, you know, it takes away something that people remember fondly.
Well, and I haven't seen it, so I have to go to you guys that have seen it. But the one thing I have heard was that it was just kind of very anticlimactic now. And maybe they just need to do away with calling it an opening show.
No, Brad, that's not true. It was fine. I was there.
Was it? Oh, okay.
The dads and the guys, they were all just being grumpy. It was like the last day of the Diz Dads convention. Yeah, it was Joe and it was Carl and it was Chris and Randall. And I don't know why, because we had a very nice breakfast right before it, but at Crystal Palace, but they were all very grumpy and it was a new show and they didn't like change. And they were all just started firing away tweets and, you know, Facebook posts about how it was a letdown and it wasn't any good. And it was fine. The show was fine. It was just different. And they were just being grumpy old men. That's all it was. That's all it was. The show was
curmudgeonry.
That's exactly what it is. And now that I'm not with them right next to me, I can say that without them punching me in the face.
Well, yeah, see, what it was is that Carl woke up, found himself in the Magic Kingdom, and couldn't help but say,
"That's right,"
because Adam had already left.
Exactly. Oh, good.
All right. Well, you know, we spent a lot of time on Magic Kingdom, and there were a lot of things happening in other parks as well. So we probably should kind of move our way around a little bit and. Let's see, Paul, why don't you get us started on Epcot? There have to have been a few things that have changed in Epcot since 2011.
Yeah, quite a few, right? I mean, I think quite a bit with food around World Showcase. And I'm just looking through the list right now. There's a few different restaurants. You've got the restaurant that nobody goes to now on the water. Right. And in Morocco, which one am I thinking of right there? It's a Spice Road table.
Spice Road.
Yeah. And nobody goes there.
The sad part is that Spice Road table kind of had three or four false starts, you know,
I mean,
where they kind of rolled out menu changes or policy changes and just didn't catch on. And last I heard, this last iteration actually gets pretty good reviews. I'm just afraid it's too late because too many people already have.
Nobody goes to it. You have. Nobody goes to it. It's got the perfect location and nobody goes to it. And it's just kind of sad.
And the food, I ate there the last trip. The food wasn't bad, you know, but
really?
I was there by myself.
Yeah. Yeah. I went to it originally. And I actually didn't even mind it. I just thought for tapas, it was expensive. Like they were charging a lot of money for what it was.
That is true.
It's just that. I mean, they never, you know, it was like they couldn't decide what it was that they wanted to be or something along those lines. It just never quite caught on.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, there's that one. I know there was a bunch of other food. I think the new Soarin' has probably been the most talked about recently. That and the Frozen ride, right? Those are probably the two ride changes that have garnered the most attention is the new Soarin' film, which I thought was a great upgrade. We saw it just last month during the Diz Dads convention. A few things that were too CGI for me, like I think it was the Taj Mahal or something when you fly over. I was like, doesn't seem right. Outside of that, though, I thought it was incredible. And I think it's pretty cool to be able to do something different, you know, and change it up. And even the new Frozen ride, you know, Maelstrom was, again, another nostalgic thing for people. I never thought it was that great of a ride, and it broke down all the time. I thought they did a really good job with the new Frozen ride. I mean, they didn't change the track. They didn't change what happened, but you know, audio animatronics and the visuals and the kind of stuff they did there. I thought they did a great job. So I think those are big. And then was the test track change in between that time?
So the test track change would have been what, 2012, 2013?
That's what I thought. Yeah. I thought it was in there. Yeah. And that one's okay.
It's funny. I was one of the ones that when it first happened, I didn't mind it. And I thought it was okay. And you know, even kind of liked the whole design aspect and all that. I got to admit that it's sort of, if there's an opposite of grown on me, that's what it's done. It's like it's faded on me or something.
I agreed. Exact same feeling, Aaron.
It's just,
I don't hate it, but it's just like, whatever.
Yeah, it's the only word I could think of right now is charmless. You know, it just, and I think part of it is because I still think it has potential to be really interesting. I just, as you go through that attraction, there are all these places where there are elements that could have been visually more interesting and more interactive and, you know, have leveraged the technology and all of that that's gone into it. And instead, it's, they're just cardboard cutouts with neon on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the car customizing thing. I mean, yeah. You want to think this would be cool and this, you know, and there's no, it seems to be no rhyme or reason to the design. It doesn't seem to affect your outcome to me anyway. Maybe I'm a stupid designer.
I was let down by that too. When they first said you're going to be able to design your own car and take it through the tests and blah, blah, blah. It sounds wicked cool. When you actually see what it really is, you just do something on a screen and it tells you how it would have performed and nothing's different.
I thought that was punch buttons now. Yeah, whatever. Yeah. Let's
go. Well, I thought here's the best example of that to me. So there's the scene where you go through the wind tunnel, right? And you look up to the side and you're supposed to be seeing, you know, the wind tunnel effect with the you know, mist over the car. But when you look up there, all you're seeing is the reflection of, you know, your ride vehicle. There was no projection effect there. And it just seems like that's begging for the projection effect of your car that you designed in a big format, you know, large format.
Sure.
The problem is you've got all these different people in the car who have designed different cars. So
but you can still show like 3 seconds of each person's car, just boom, boom, and you can actually see the comparisons. That's a cool idea, Aaron. That would make a big difference.
Or randomly pick one. I mean, you know.
Sure, just one of them. Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Hey, that's my car.
I think after the coolness of designing the car, because to me that's the best part of Test Track. Give me that program at home. I'd be really happy, you know, designing the cars.
Right.
But yeah, after designing it, you expect more from the ride than what you get. The ride is okay.
Yeah.
But not a lot has really changed with it, other than a few cardboard cutouts with the actual ride since it opened. It's a little more reliable.
A little.
Hey, Aaron. It's still my. My brother-in-law posted on the chat boards here, and it's making me upset that I didn't lead with this when the changes to Epcot came, but they've introduced larger pretzels in Epcot too. The pretzels that they're serving now are massive compared. I think they charge you $1 more, but which is probably why they did it, but the pretzels now are completely massive, just huge. So I'm a little bit upset I didn't lead with that, because that's obviously the biggest change that they've made there.
Well, but I have to ask you though. I mean, if the pretzels have gotten so much larger, doesn't that actually reduce your beer to pretzel ratio?
No, you just get two beers with every one pretzel now instead of a 1-to-1.
Okay. All right, so that's why pretzels have those holes. They're getting twice as much out of you for a beer.
But it doesn't matter because I use a magic band, so no money changes hands.
Right.
I just tap. I just keep tapping. Yeah, no, there's no money. I don't pay them anything. I just keep tapping this little orange magic band to something, and they keep giving me beer and pretzels. It's wonderful.
Oh, you're brilliant.
It's just a wonderful. I don't know how they've made it work, but it's great.
Bless your heart.
Oh, my.
So how about you, Brad? What's the big change for you at Epcot?
Well, a couple of other changes that popped up. One, but now my girl's getting a little bit older. It's not a big a deal for me, but when they switched over Royal Summer House, the meet and greet, and put in Anna and Elsa, brought Frozen to the front where everybody wants it. All right. Everybody had a cheering in the background. But yeah, crickets. You need to cue the cricket sounds, however. I think my favorite thing, and honestly, I just did it this last trip. It was brand new. As they added the new Finding Dory characters to Turtle Talk, it kind of made Turtle Talk fun for me again. I hadn't gone for the last several trips, and I went specifically to see the new Finding Dory characters. And then, you know, My kids are older, so it's not the biggest thrill for me, but it was just fun watching the kids interact with the new characters.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And it's one of those things, it's just a little change, but it had a good impact because it refreshed something that had gotten a little stale. And it was always a cool concept, but maybe it had gotten a little stale.
And I think the Disney Phineas and Ferb Agent P thing came into existence during this time, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Right.
And then it went away during this time. So.
Well, and it's still there.
But we used to have fun with it. Oh, is it? Then but it's in a different...
It's
still
there. It's just downplayed. They just downplay it, and they're not out as much like handing out the transponders and everything as they were.
You don't have to use their phone anymore. You can
on your app. Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
But it's a big change because what it replaced was the Kim Possible adventure that my kids loved. My daughter was a huge Kim Possible fan, and so although they enjoyed Phineas and Ferb, they kind of missed Kim Possible.
Yeah, my kids were just getting right into Kim Possible when it disappeared.
For me, I think one of the biggest changes at Epcot has been if the changes at Magic Kingdom food-wise were really mostly about table service food, although some counter service too. I think the big change at Epcot was the lounges. That some of those existed because I looked it up, and La Cava actually opened in 2009. But around this time, around 2011, 2012, is when things like the Tutto Gusto wine cellar was kind of carved out of Tutto Italia. And it's not technically a lounge, but the bakery at France was kind of expanded. And so you got Les Halles, and it was, you can get a fantastic breakfast or lunch at Les Halles now. And it's those kind of little themed additions in the countries around World Showcase that I think have been the most positive additions. The new ice cream place in France, too. The flip side to that is that it seems to me that Future World, other than the new Soarin', is kind of withering on the vine.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't added a lot more to it, Aaron, but it's still, there's so much to do and see there. Like, it still is, every time we go, one of our favorite things just to walk around and see all the stuff there. And I agree with you. I think they could add a lot more and do more, but I still think it stands. If you look around all the parks and all the things that could be updated and changed and stuff, World Showcase, for the most part, I think, stands alone. And then you go to Future World. I still think Epcot probably needs the least out of all the other parks if they're going to focus their attention on stuff, Maybe Magic Kingdom is fine now. Like, maybe that's the least just because of all the updating they've done. But Hollywood Studios is a half-day park, and Animal Kingdom could still use a lot more. So I still think Epcot's fine if they focus their attention outside of it.
All right. So, Terry, I'm going to let you be our – well, actually, let me get Nate first, because then I want to let Terry be our transition. So, Nate, talk a little bit about Epcot. What stands out to you about Epcot, about changes at Epcot?
Well, you all stole just about everything of mine except for two things. the Three Caballeros animatronics added to the Grand Fiesta Tour.
Oh, right.
That's right.
Some really nice animatronics that they kind of added in without much fanfare.
Yeah, and Muppet Mobile Labs, which we also missed over in the Magic Kingdom.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
where they added the thing in Liberty Square with the Muppets.
Yep.
I only caught to see a part of that, but yeah. They're putting Muppets everywhere, which is interesting.
Right. Isn't it interesting? The other thing that happened during this time period was like the resurgence and redisappearance of the Muppets. We had two Muppet movies get made and a Muppet TV show, and now there's no more new Muppet content going. All right. Well, so Terry, why don't you transition us? Give us your take on Epcot, and then maybe pick up on Paul's comments about your favorite park, Animal Kingdom.
With Epcot, the biggest change that hasn't been mentioned, and it's a downer, off-kilter is gone.
Oh, yeah.
And that one is still one I just can't forgive management for letting those guys go. Even though none of them were Canadian, Not a single one. But they played some great Canadian music, and that was really nice. And I think it's the one thing from Epcot that's sorely missed. But what's been a nice addition in the food market is, I thought you were going that way there, Aaron, when you were mentioning about table service for other parks. There's more quick spot stops generally at Epcot, and that's because the food and wine festivals are about 3 days a year from going full year.
Well, that's true. I mean, you do have the fact that Epcot, I guess, among a lot of folks, is now derisively referred to as the festival park.
Yep. And that's a good. I'm fine with that. I like that. And being reminded here by Joe to remind everybody that the DVC Lounge addition to Epcot. That's a real nice spot and a fairly recent one. Mm-hmm. They did one a year or two back, I think, but it was temporary. It only lasted a little bit, and they pulled it. But the new spot is very nice.
See, I'm a little conflicted about that new spot because putting the DVC Lounge there, and it's a nice lounge, but putting a nice lounge there is sort of an acknowledgement that there's nothing coming to upstairs at Imagination anytime soon.
True, but it is a spot that's easy to fix that with. I think they're probably struggling with what to do with Figment. You know, I know Ellen's is on the short list to go away and get replaced with something else. But Figment sells a lot of merchandise.
Well, this is true.
And so you either update it and expand it or prepare to face the wrath and the hit to the pocketbooks by letting it go.
Well, they did that once, right? I mean, they downplayed Figment and pulled it, and they end up, you know, bringing him back and much more prominent, you know, because of the backlash of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's why we have the version of the attraction that we have now.
Yeah.
At least partially.
Yep.
All right, so we'll transition us on over to Animal Kingdom and talk to us about the changes that have happened there. And there's a lot that's, you know, kind of on the cusp of happening right now.
Has anyone even visited Animal Kingdom since 2011?
Hey, it's the best.
Hey, I'm with you, Terrence.
The best park.
I just had to get him going.
Hold me back, boys. Hold me back. Let me have. There's been a few changes to Animal Kingdom since 2011, and like you say, there's bigger changes just right down the road here with the opening of Avatar Land this summer. That's going to be huge. But in the changes we've seen since 2011. You know, kind of starting at the front of the park. The Oasis is still there, but the last couple of times I've been there, there's been a lot fewer animals in there than there were in 2011. I don't know if they're just changing things over at that time of year that I've been there. It tends to be cooler, or if it's I think they need to refurbish that area too. The plants, I think, are getting a little bit older. So maybe they're just waiting to do that, but that has me a little bit concerned because the Oasis is one of the best parts of the park. But you know, we've seen some great additions. The Wilderness Explorer addition's been a great ad for kids. Tiffin's and Nomad Lounge has been an absolutely fantastic addition for the older kids. And, you know, in addition to that, we've got the adding of rum Dole Whips over at Tamu Tamu, Dawa Bar serving breakfast in a glass. We've had the opening of the Harambe Market, which is a great spot for quick foods. And one of the things I noticed that closed that kind of struck me about changes in our society since 2011. What was it? Dooku La Filimu is gone. That was the place you could go to get your film developed.
Is that film? Remember
film?
Film.
It was. I think it was the last holdout, like individual spot holdout in all of Disney World to be.
Epcot still has one.
Mm-hmm. Do they?
There's still a hammer shop at Epcot. Yeah, it's near Spaceship Earth.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. And but I guess because of its location next to the safari. You know. And there's something we've seen the addition very recently of the nighttime safaris, which is really well done and a lot of fun.
Now, as an Animal Kingdom lover, what's your take on the safari becoming an animal watching experience, not being a, you know, story about poachers?
That story was always pretty thin.
Simba won.
I don't miss the poaching spiel, and I don't think any of the guides do either. There's a difference between the daytime safari and the nighttime safari. You know, the daytime it's about looking out for the animals, and the nighttime it's about listening to your guide. The guide's much more involved in the stories and that. But really, with Animal Kingdom, we've just seen a massive upgrade in beverage options for adults. They're everywhere, and that's a wonderful thing. And I haven't seen it yet, but Rivers of Light has opened, even though Mickey's Jam and Jungle Parade is gone. I think everybody's very happy with the... Well, I shouldn't say very happy. I think people are content with the Rivers of Light edition they got. No, it's not the one we were promised.
Well, yeah, I mean, so far it seems the biggest complaint about Rivers of Light that I've heard is that it doesn't really tell a story, that it's there's a lot of visual cool stuff, but it doesn't necessarily all hang together. I don't know that that's much different, really, than almost any nighttime spectacular show, if you think about it.
No, but it's... Once you learn the story of what it's supposed to be compared to what you get, just because we haven't reached that way with technology yet, you know, then you understand the story, what the shamans out there are supposed to be doing, and that it's just they're lacking the 100 or so drones that were around them. But yeah, a massive upgrade for Animal Kingdom for food and alcohol.
All right. Anybody else want to chime in on Animal Kingdom changes that they particularly appreciate one way or the other?
Well, at the and I'm with you, Terrence. Paul can go over to Epcot where it needs no help. It's in great shape. I'll spend my time in Animal Kingdom. Thank you.
Well, no one else is there, so you'll have plenty of time.
I know. That's why we're there. But anyway, you know what? This last DizDad convention, the Tree Awakening. That was they were doing the Tree Awakening, and that has got to be one of the coolest castle projection type programs yet. When those animals start to come alive on that tree, just sitting there staring at the tree, and all of a sudden a spider starts climbing up the side of the tree that was a piece of concrete that's been carved into a tree, carved quote unquote into a tree, and all of a sudden it just starts walking up the side. Oh, that, I love that Tree Awakening. That was really a cool program.
Yeah, I mean, I think that what we've seen overall is in some ways Animal Kingdom kind of catching up to the tech in the other parks, but doing it in a way that integrates that tech into the environments there in Animal Kingdom.
Of that, the difference of that park. Yeah, well said.
And I also think
good to see.
But Aaron, I think we're probably too early right now with Animal Kingdom 2 because Avatar Land was announced in like 2011. It was like, I think towards the end of 2011, they announced that they were going to be doing that. Right. And I think once that comes out,
because it was September 2011 while I was at Walt Disney World that they made that announcement. And I was sure when I got a little, you know, text alert on my phone while I was in a, because I was there for a conference and I'm sitting in a conference and I get this little alert and I'm trying surreptitiously, you know, on my phone using garbage phone internet from 2011, trying to find out what all this was. Because it didn't make any sense to me that they were announcing this Avatar project for Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, a lot of people, it didn't make sense to a lot of people, right? And there was a lot of talk about it, and people thought it would eventually get dropped or they'd never go through with it. But from all reports, and Terry, you probably know better than anybody because you probably follow it closer, but it sounds like this is going to be pretty amazing. And so once they open that and we get a chance to see it, you know, so if we're doing this next year or in 2 years from now, once it comes out, we may all be saying, you know, like that's the biggest thing to happen in the last 7 or 8 years at Disney. And it sounds like they did, you know, they're doing a pretty incredible job with that. So that's, you know, we're probably just a little early on fully judging the changes in the last 6 years of Animal Kingdom.
Yeah, it's going to be massive. I mean, if you watch the commercials, you know, previewing it, the Na'vi at the end, that's not an actor. That's an animatronic. That's the next generation, you know.
Yeah, this is the full size, fully integrated, you know, those next gen animatronics that's actually part of an attraction.
And those aren't CG effects. That's the actual animatronic they're showing. That is so cool.
Yeah.
There's 100 moving parts in their face. Compare that to the next most sophisticated animatronic in Disney World, and it's there's no comparison. It's comparing your stuffed animal to Terminator.
So what you're telling us is that we should be concerned because it may actually be that Animal Kingdom is going to be the source of the LMD invasion.
Yeah,
there you go.
Great.
I'll be at the Dawa bar. I'm okay with that.
You won't even notice. Terry won't even notice.
Right. The life model decoys will take over, and Terry will just offer him a drink.
Yep.
You know, a lot of things in Animal Kingdom kind of shuffled, you know, just to make room for things. We were talking earlier about the fact that, you know, you had Camp Minnie Mickey, which was mostly a kind of a glorified meet and greet. And so they took maybe the highlights of that and moved it over to a new meet and greet space. You know, it's not everything that was there, but they took the highlights, put it somewhere else, made the space. You know, they picked up the Festival of Lion King Theater and built a new and improved Festival of Lion King Theater, probably where it belonged in the first place in Africa, and opened up the space for Avatar. So, yeah, I mean, I would agree. I think Animal Kingdom has had a lot of change, but most of that change was really set up for things that we're really going to see kind of building for the next year or two, right?
Yeah.
And having an impact on that park. I mean, it's crazy to me when you look now trying to do, like, any kind of planning for a trip, you know, in the fall. How do you plan for Animal Kingdom? Because you've got no idea at this point what the traffic flow impact of Avatar is going to be, what the real impact on you know, the like how it's going to handle the crowd, because you have to assume that it's going to attract more people, but you don't know how efficient it's going to be at getting those folks through attractions and things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting to watch.
Yeah, I think you just have to do what you should do in the first place. If you're going for 7 days, spend 6 at Animal Kingdom.
Oh, come on, maybe only 5.
There's not enough rum in Disney.
Because somebody sent Paul to Animal Kingdom.
Exactly.
All right, well, you know, there are still two big areas we haven't talked about yet, and we've already run over an hour, so I don't want to belabor it for too long, but you know, Hollywood Studios at this point, I don't even know how much there is to talk about because it's sort of, you know, all to be determined.
It's all gone.
Yeah.
It's what it is. Yeah, it's all gone.
There's been a lot of changes in 6 years, but it doesn't matter because what's going to be left when they get finished? What's it going to look like? It's a different park.
Well, let's say this, though. I mean, it's true that the biggest impact that we've seen is things disappearing, things going away, some of which I think plenty of us are cheering.
Yep, which is, move right along.
You know,
the hat is gone. The hat is gone.
Ding dong, the hat is gone. Yay. But you know, there's also the challenge. I mean, it's ironic to me almost because on the one hand, there are fewer attractions that are running right now. On the other hand, the things that they've replaced it with, even though they're fairly temporary and, you know, not necessarily infrastructure intensive, I feel like they've done a really good job of taking, you know, filling my attention, filling my time in a way that I enjoy.
Hear, hear.
The, you know, the launch bay, I mean, for all Tim's complaints about losing the Animation Academy.
He's really upset about that.
Yeah, yeah.
He's
the
really
Animation Academy
that.
was good.
Yeah.
But
the
launch bay is awesome too.
It is good.
Well, and the interactions, I mean, I love that they're using that space to kind of experiment with those more organic interactions between guests and characters.
Mm-hmm. The characters. Yeah.
You can trade with the Jawas. That's an experience, you know, it's kind of a small one, but that's something they don't have anywhere else. They've never done that. That's more of an interaction with a character than you've probably gotten anywhere. Right. I mean, you're actually trading things back and forth with these guys. So that's kind of cool.
Yeah, I mean, that one's great. The fact that Boba Fett occasionally, you know, walks around. And, you know, when they do the March of the First Order, I mean, you know, having them interact with guests in ways that
in the crowd, just walking organically through the crowd.
That assume, I love that they have, that they're not shy about assuming knowledge of the films.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, they'll look at my daughter has this R2-D2 dress she likes to wear. And, you know, they'll kind of point her out and say, wait, these are the droids we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we get the whole interaction with them, you know, based on that. It's just a lot of fun.
And you find out that the up front, there is a jail up front. It's right there.
So, you know, I guess I really enjoy that part of it. And I'm excited as a result for what's coming. And it's interesting to me, you know, we now know that we've got a 2019 opening that's been, you know, at least promised to us, whether we get it or not, who knows, but it's what we're supposed to get for Star Wars Land. And it's interesting to me that we kind of, you know, they've maybe bought us off with that announcement about Star Wars Land because they didn't really say anything about Toy Story Land,
mm-hmm.
which we're also supposed to be getting.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know whether that means it's going to be farther off or, you know, what the connection is there. But, you know, I think that those two pieces together go a long way to curing, you know, things that we've complained about Hollywood Studios for a really long time now.
Oh, absolutely.
Agreed.
And I think that it's another one, just like, you know, we're saying the Animal Kingdom. I think you'll look at this a few years down the road, and these are the years where they're investing, and like we haven't seen the product yet, right? I mean, the one of the biggest news to come out of Disney, not just Disney World, since we've, you know, started this, like you said, 6 years ago, was it, you know, in October 2012 when they bought Star Wars,
right?
And that was huge.
Changed the direction, yeah,
totally. And I mean, the movies and all that kind of stuff is one thing, but it gave them, you know, their own, you know. They could make a whole Star Wars park if they wanted, but it's a natural fit to put it into Hollywood Studios and do that. So, you know, it was great. Studios was kind of floundering and people were talking about, what are they doing? It's not an active studio. It's not a working studio. What are they going to do with this? This is kind of a perfect fit for it. So I think it's another case of there, you know, we're going to look back in 2 or 3 years when they've got this Star Wars Land open, not to mention Toy Story Land. And,
okay,
you know,
Here's the flip side to all this, though, that Joe mentions in the chat room. He brings up the, you know, he throws out the name Hyperspace Hoopla that, you know, everybody was enjoying so much during the days when you had a Star Wars weekend because you kind of focused everything into one weekend because you didn't own it, all that stuff. The one big change that I'm not sure I'm so fond of is that you know, I think I've mentioned this before, so I don't want to rant about it for too long, but it seems that since Disney purchased Star Wars, the kind of silly, kitschy, fun side of Star Wars has gotten shoved into a drawer somewhere.
That's fine.
And they don't want to let it out.
But that's okay, because I don't like Darth Vader breakdancing. I'm sorry.
I get that.
Like, if that's what gets shelved, I think it's okay.
And that's the extreme with Hyperspace Hoopla. But on the other hand, just as an example, as much as I like the sort of, you know, they've made some changes to the Jedi training experience for the kids that is better because they can get more kids involved because they do two at once like they did at Disneyland, but I think they do it a little better. You know, you can see things better just because of the way the stage works and all that. But the flip side of that is that that used to have some really fun, you know, kind of silly humor that was appropriate because the kids that were involved were, you know, they're 4 to 12 years old. That's the age limit. So it made sense that it was a little silly, a little fun. Mm-hmm. And all of that humor has been bled out of that show. And it's gotten to be a very serious encounter. So yeah, I mean, I don't enjoy that one nearly as much as I used to, and my kids still love it, but I don't know. I feel like it loses something when it's forced into that more serious mode.
Yeah, I think part of the difference there you're seeing is they probably have this draw to be a little bit silly, but with they have to keep the setup for the next shows.
Well, okay.
And
here's an example.
We're going into a show here, which if it keeps with the theme, is going to be a doom and gloom next movie, yeah, right? Yeah, you know,
here's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Okay, I mean, it used to be you would get this great kind of silly bit about the kids, you know, showing the kids how to open their lightsabers and the fact that, you know, it's a training lightsaber. And so if it gets stuck when it's extended, you can just push it in with your hand. But, you know, you can only do that once with a real lightsaber. Right? I mean, just little bits like that were kind of nods to the parents who were paying attention, who were stuck standing in the sun because their kids wanted to do this show.
Well, who knows? Maybe we just need to give it time to let it settle in. Because the flip side to that is, you know, strong Star Wars fans were the ones that were also on the other side of it complaining, saying they don't take Star Wars seriously. It's just the you know, the funny scenes from the bar. It's this kitschy kind of approach instead of the true sense of being in a Star Wars universe. Once they get it completely set up, don't you think they could actually go back and do Hyperspace Hoopla to a whole new level and make special events where they really, you know, take it to another level? So I think it'd be good to have some of it come back, but right. But the other side of it is the other side has been missing the whole time. So I'm kind of glad that we're getting some more of the true Star Wars feel.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. I think I stand.
Guess we'll have to see.
Ground as somebody who you know stood in those lines in 1977 for Star Wars. And,
you know, yeah.
Spent a summer watching.
Yep. Yep.
But anyway, Joe does make a good point about, you know, a piece of the Star Wars stuff that is, you know, come a long way. And that is that the most recent incarnation of the Galactic Spectacular is spectacular.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Loved
it. That's the best nighttime show experience at Hollywood Studios probably ever.
Ever. It's unbelievable.
Absolutely.
They've done an incredible job with that.
All right. Well, you know, so we've talked about all the parks. I don't want to go away. I mean, we're an hour and 13 in. We're running long, but I don't really care at this point because we're having fun with it. And we haven't talked about a place where there's been really massive change at Walt Disney World, and that's outside the parks, both at the resorts and at Disney Springs. And you know, Nate, we haven't heard much from you in a bit. I didn't ask for your input on Hollywood Studios because I know your general opinion is that, well, you don't have one because you don't care.
Well, we did a Blue Sky on Hollywood Studios I was part of, and I told them they should just bulldoze the whole park, and they took that to heart, so they listened.
Hey, thanks.
then they bought Star Wars, so you're welcome. Not to
get. All right, so talk a little bit about those changes, you know, either in the resorts or in Disney Springs that jump out to you.
New resort, Art of Animation. That was 2012, I believe.
Yep.
And a couple of new DVC additions at the Poly and Grand Floridian. And pretty soon, a new addition there at the Wilderness Lodge.
Right. You're getting an expansion at Wilderness Lodge. And Aulani opened during all this. I mean, it's not at Walt Disney World, but they were certainly talking about it at Walt Disney World.
Yep. And also outside the parks, a couple of the ships got refurbed.
Right. Well, and we got a new ship, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that the Fantasy rolled out in 2012.
And in that little place over there called Disney Springs, I don't recognize the place anymore. So it's easy to get lost over there now.
Yeah, there's a lot going on over there. It's easy to lose track of where you are. As a matter of fact, we got turned around completely trying to find the buses to go back and on DizDad's convention time. I was coming back with Jeff Fry, and we got totally turned around. Now, it might have been the Beverly's Revenge cocktail that we had on the way out, but we kind of walked way out of our way trying to find our way back to the buses.
It makes you feel better. The cast members are confused too. They totally sent me the wrong direction for the bus. I'm like, where is the bus? Oh, it's right over there. And I walked all the way down and went, yeah, it's not here.
Yeah. And believe it or not, I was totally sober and got completely lost there. Yeah, you can believe either part of that.
Well, I don't believe the first part of that. Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, the Springs is a good example of a place where that food and beverage upgrade overall all over the property has really, come through big time.
Yeah, stepped up its game.
I mean, we'll see. I'm still a little skeptical that Disney Springs is going to be able to support the number of higher-end restaurants that they built there. We'll see.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them.
You're saying go to them now while you can.
Well, I mean, I to some extent, I think it's going to be a good thing because I think the ones that can't compete are going to shake out. I can't imagine STK is going to stay around a whole lot longer. But meanwhile, it's going to up the game of the ones that remain, I think.
I tell you what, Aaron, I was there in a typically low crowd time at the end of October, early November, and the nighttime crowds at Disney Springs were, I mean, it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe how crowded that place was. And
Springs in general or?
Springs in general. Yes. Just out in the streets of Disney Springs. It was hard to maneuver through there and I was traveling solo.
Yeah. Right. No, absolutely. I mean, the Springs has become a much more attractive destination. And there are lots of people I know who pretty much avoided downtown Disney, you know, for years at a time. There was nothing there that was compelling for them. And I think Disney Springs is the opposite. Not only is it compelling for guests to spend some time there, but it's attracting locals again.
Yeah. And as long as they can keep control over the reasons why Pleasure Island closed, it's a fantastic destination for locals. Those the parkades, that's one of the main reasons why they built those, I think, because at least half the people in Disney Springs when I was there were locals. And you go back to downtown Disney, and the only locals were the cast members.
Right. Yeah, and you know, there's actually really good counter service options that have opened in Disney Springs as well. I mean, we finally actually have, by all accounts, some really good fast food type pizza in Disney Springs. And people are raving about Blaze.
Yeah, but I think you make a good point, Aaron, with the one thing is that the signature level dining. There's just so many. There's several of them, that, and their price ranges. Way up there. I mean, the reason why the streets are so full, guys, is because they're all going from menu to menu going and saying, how much? And they got to go check out the next one. But they're all good. But can they all? Is there enough big money there to keep all those restaurants open? That is an interesting, intriguing thought, Aaron. I think that's something to follow. See how many of them make it and what they replace it with.
I mean, I was there's full of paddlefish, but it's been getting great reviews. So maybe I was wrong.
Yeah. And there is enough big money there for Golden Oaks. So
that's right. They went to another phase. So obviously it wasn't just a phase.
Yeah.
Joe mentions, I think one of the things that's helped there has been that there's entertainment destinations as well. So Splitsville has become really popular, and one of the things that's helped it become popular is that there's both stuff to do and good quality food.
Yeah. I think Fork and Dine.
And I think it's forcing House of Blues to kind of up their game a little bit. It just seems to me that maybe they're working a little harder to bring in good shows to, make sure that the entertainment product that they're producing will hold people on their part of that area in Disney Springs. So
just announced Lanuba's going away.
Well, now see that one
bringing in a new show.
Yeah.
Aren't they?
Well, we don't know. They haven't said.
Oh, they didn't say. Oh, okay.
They're in works. They're in discussions about something new.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
It didn't even say new show, but Cirque du Soleil and Disney are in talks about something new to Disney.
Could be very, very interesting because I kind of wonder, Cirque du Soleil does, I think more than one, but at least at Club Med Butikana, they have this whole thing they do what they call Creative, which is they do like a kids program where they teach kids to do Cirque stuff.
Oh, wow.
And I almost wonder, if they're gonna close.
That'd be a perfect fit for Disney, you would think.
Inside activity. Wow. I'm totally speculating. I just came up with it right now as we're sitting here, but if it's not going to be a show, maybe they're looking to do something more interactive like that.
I'm sure Disney's listening to this podcast, so good thought.
Just the lawyers, Brad. Just the lawyers.
Just the lawyers.
And they did steal Nate's idea. So
that's right.
About Hollywood Studios. Nate's
idea, so. They might as well use mine. I mean, come on, they could use a good one.
Who is scraping the bottom there?
Wow.
All right. I think the other thing we should mention about resorts is that, in the time that this show's been running, all of the moderate resorts have gotten refurbishments, and now they're getting their second round. Mm-hmm. Right on top of that, within the same time period. I mean, we've got massive construction that's about to kick off or has kicked off at both Caribbean Beach and Coronado Springs. Coronado Springs was the first of those resorts to get an upgrade. I think theirs actually probably was just before the show, like around 2009, 2010 maybe. But all the rest of the moderates got updates, since we started the show.
Yeah, doesn't seem that long.
And the new remodels aren't just refreshing. They're making major changes to both of those resorts. So
right.
Huge.
And the refreshes were pretty big changes. I mean, they changed the room capacity. Some of those.
Rooms. Yep. Yep.
And
a couple other kind of around property things that people are mentioning in the chat. They've gone a long way working on the bus arrival and the bus schedules, and so they're now using those arrival time screens, which we found really helpful. I mean, it gets frustrating when they update late, right? You feel like the bus is already almost there, and then it updates, and it's going to be another 5 minutes. But at least you have an idea of when to expect.
You got some kind of idea. Yeah.
It's a little better. And the express transportation was fantastic. Even with the price increase they announced, I'd pay it.
I'd pay it. Man, I'd pay it again. That was awesome.
Oh,
with that though too, guys, security's changed quite a bit.
Absolutely.
Security at the park. Yeah, very much.
Entrances has changed quite a bit. So
and Disneyland as well.
And that's a big part of what makes the express transportation worth it is that, the security system has changed.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of changes too that we don't see. I mean, we're talking millions of dollars, right? Where they're changing the whole infrastructure over Walt Disney World with the road realignments and upgrades, expansions our upgrades to the water and sewer and all of that. I mean, these are things we don't see.
Yeah, the big one that they did, that we did see, that they, you know, kind of made some noise about, is that they now have this huge solar farm.
Yeah, the solar farm's cool. It's Mickey-shaped. The one is Mickey-shaped. It's awesome.
And yet we still have Wi-Fi and website from the 20th century. I don't quite get it, but hey.
It's because they've got Mickey on a bike, you know.
Really.
Yeah. He's available now that they have a solar farm. They put him over there. He's
Here's what I want to do, because we do need to kind of wrap. We're running close to an hour and a half, and I like to keep the show, you know, manageable for people. So I want to go around the room here, you know, one time real quickly, and just let everybody pick one thing that we haven't talked about yet that is a significant change somewhere in, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be Walt Disney World, but we've talked mostly about Walt Disney World. But a major change that's happened during the life of the show that we didn't get a chance to really dive into. And so, Brad, why don't you get us started? What's a big change that we didn't really talk about and you wish we had?
We did touch base a lot about dining, but the one thing that to kind of hone it in a little bit better is I'm very excited about the quality level of themed type restaurants and the interactive experiences like at Skipper's Canteen and you know, Jock Lindsay and of course their bar, Trader Sam's, those things. But I just love the way that they've created a lot more interactivity with some of the dining and drinking areas. It's just made a lot more fun.
That's a great example. And how about you, Nate?
I'm going to go to the cruise line, the refurb of the Magic. I got to ride it before the refurb and after the refurb, and the changes on that ship were really good. They redid the lobby and they added the aqua dunk, and they rethemed one of the restaurants from Parrot K to Karaoke's.
How about you? Let's see, Paul. What was the big change that kind of sticks out to you that we haven't talked about?
Well, I think the biggest thing, and I'm surprised nobody's brought it up yet, is that 5 years ago, Disney started hosting a DizDads convention. And now they have it every year.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing is massive.
They finally caught on.
I mean, right? I mean, that became a thing. You know? No, but in all seriousness, it's not, you know, it's not the biggest thing that happened to Disney World, but it's one of the bigger things I think that's happened with this group of people is that, you know, we now, while guys would get together anyways and have meetups and DizDads meets and stuff like that, the fact that we now have one time a year when a good, you know, large number of us all get together and it grows every year and we start doing more and more and people start, you know, meeting each other in person more often. We've been able to do it 5 years in a row and next year will be six. I think for this group, that's a pretty big thing. And I'm really glad that as this thing keeps growing, we're able to start doing more and more like that. And I think it's been pretty cool.
I mean, that's a good point, Paul. And if we're going to talk about things that have grown and changed, you know, I mean, the show itself, you know, when we launched, and I tell this story to people all the time, and it's like, did we really do that, right? Am I that crazy? When we started, we did one show every other week, right? Two shows a month. And we had somebody else who was not an active part of the group who did our editing for us.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went to, and this was Nate's fault.
Yes.
We went to a once a week show, right? Because Nate had this great idea for this tournament.
Yeah.
And in order to do the tournament, we needed to do it every week because otherwise it was going to take us half a year. So we went to every week and we went to a show a week. And then we decided that we missed our trip reports. And so we started doing a whole nother show. Right? We did our first live show at a DizDads Club convention, our first official live show. Was at the first DDC.
First live broadcast of an attraction.
That's right.
That's right. So, you know, we've grown so much, and it's because of so many people participating. I mean, the last time I counted, we'd had over 80 guys who had participated in a show in one way or another. And it's fantastic. I mean, the more the merrier. I always love it when we can, you know, get some new guys involved, bring some new guys on the show. It's always fun and refreshing. And that's what this show is all about, is getting different perspectives from guys who are part of this same community. And so thank you, everybody, really, for participating, for being ready to volunteer and you know, cooperate with my crazy schedule that has you East Coasters staying up way too late to record. I really do appreciate it a lot. So it's been a blast. And I've had so much fun that I'm looking forward to doing it for at least one more year and probably beyond. But if I was to mention one, you know, last kind of thing that I wanted to make sure we talked about real quickly, it's, you know, nighttime entertainment has, by the time we get done with this year, we'll have almost completely turned over. You know, Fantasmic is still running at Hollywood Studios, but frankly, nobody plans around Fantasmic anymore, it seems to me. It all changes to planning around Star Wars, a galaxy, Galactic Spectacular. Magic Kingdom's got its new show that starts next month, or 2 months from now, I guess.
Two months, yeah. May.
Yeah, so Magic Kingdom's getting its new show. Animal Kingdom's new show just launched. We're all waiting for Epcot to catch up. Eventually.
Maybe. Epcot's fine. Just let it be.
No, it's not.
It's fine.
So just a complete change in the nighttime entertainment, and you know, we've avoided mentioning, but Main Street Electrical Parade has gone away.
Yep.
So, you know, no parade in the Magic Kingdom for the first time since, I think on a consistent basis, for the first time since 2010, maybe 2009. But if you go back...
No, nighttime parade.
It was kind of the normal thing, right? You didn't have a nightly parade. So...
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see, you know, how soon Magic Kingdom gets a parade back. Because as far as I know, there ain't anything coming soon. Not that I know anything special. So anyway, you know, you all have heard our take on the changes at Walt Disney World over the last 5 years. It's been a lot of fun talking about them. Thanks for indulging us. You know, we'd love to hear from you. You can email us at podcast@dizdads.com, visit our blog, dizdads.com, tweet us at dizdadspodcast on Twitter, or visit us on Facebook at facebook.com/dizdadspodcast. Until next time, I've been Aaron Rittmaster with Terry Hawkins.
Have a birthday rum there for us, guys.
Paul.
It's been fun, guys. Talk to you soon.
Nathan Trent.
Good night, everybody.
And Brad Coates.
Time for another Joffrey's and Dreaming About Disney.
That was fun, guys.
That was a good one.
Yeah. It's hard to believe, though, we barely scratched the surface.
No,
But I think we got the best parts.
It's hard to listen to you guys defend Animal Kingdom with a straight face.
Well, and you know what?
It doesn't
hard
need
to listen
our
to somebody
defense.
Say Epcot's just, fine.
Brad, really? Brad, I just do it to get on Terry's.
Oh,
get on
okay. Terry's.
That's the only reason I say what I say.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun, and you know, we were worried we weren't going to have content, and then we were worried that we had too much content, and it all ultimately, I think, kind of worked out, and we ran
settled out pretty good.
I think it worked out well. I think it worked out really well.
Hey. And you said a lot of great things, Aaron, but I think from all of us to you, we'd like to say thank you for building putting together a place where we can feel like we belong to something bigger than ourselves and to be a part of. The fact you've had 90 people involved isn't just because there's 90 guys kicking down the doors. It's because you created a place that we want to be a part. And it's not all on you, but you do deserve a lot of credit, buddy. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Aaron.
I appreciate it. It's a lot of fun. And like I keep saying, the more the merrier.
Yep.
Let's see. So what do we got coming up? Oh, and I totally missed my opportunity. Gosh, I almost feel like I should fade the music a little more here and mention before I forget here that you all should be watching. If you're listening this long, keep your eye on DizTalkRadio.com. We've got some stuff coming up. The schedule is going to be expanding here in April. I've got a couple of new shows that are going to be joining the lineup, so we're going to juggle the schedule a little bit. We're going to have looks like we'll have a different show kind of as the primary show each day of the week. Basically, we'll take turns. The show will have its own block during the day, and then a different show will have the main evening block, and then we're going to run just sort of a mishmash block of all the various shows that are participating on the channel in the various other times of the day, so you can kind of sample other shows in a really convenient way. So watch Diz Talk Radio. Lots of good stuff coming beginning of April, including Behind the Ears podcast, joining the lineup, and the folks from Mighty Marvel Geeks.
Oh, cool.